Dad to ask another question. Tansy thought Dad was a bit shocked at how Nicky spoke to him. Not that he was rude, exactly. It's just that he didn't seem to care what Dad thought. Plus, Nicky was now taller than him, but when Tansy pointed it out, Dad didn't seem to think that was amazing at all. And then Tansy got cold because she hadn't brought her coat, so they went back and Suze was already home from ballet, so Nicky went upstairs to go on the computer and they played some games, and then they played with her terrapin, and then they just went to her room and she said they could watch a DVD because she had a DVD player, and that she watched a whole one by herself every night before she went to sleep. "Doesn't your mum read to you?" Tansy said. "She doesn't have time. That's why she got me the DVD player," Suze said. She had a whole shelf of films, all her favourites, that she could watch up there when they were watching something she didn't like downstairs. "Marty likes gangster films, so they watch those," she said, her nose wrinkling, and it took Tansy a few minutes to realise she was actually talking about her dad, and she didn't know what to say. "I like your jacket," Suze said, peering into Tansy's bag. "My mum made it for me for Christmas." "Your mum actually made it?" She held it up so that the sequins mum had sewn into the sleeves glinted in the light. "Oh my God, is she like a fashion designer or something?"
"No," Tansy said. "She's a cleaner."
Suze laughed as if she was joking.
"What are all those?"
she said when she saw the maths papers in her bag. This time Tansy kept her mouth closed.
"Is that maths? Oh my God, it's like squiggles. It's like Greek,"
she giggled, flicking through them, then holding them from two fingers like they were something horrible.
"Are they your brothers? Is he like a maths freak?"
"I don't know." Tansy blushed because she was not very good at lying.
"Ugh, what a brainiac! Freaky geeky!"
She tossed them to one side while she pulled out Tansy's other clothes.
"Does everything you own have sequins on it?"
Tansy didn't say anything. She left the papers there on the floor because she didn't want to have to explain, and she didn't want to think about the Olympiad. And she just thought maybe it would be easier if she tried to be like Suze from now on, because she seemed really happy, and Dad seemed really happy here. And then she said maybe they should watch television downstairs, because she really didn't want to think about anything anymore. They were three quarters of the way through Fantasia when Tansy heard Dad calling.
"Tans, your mum's here."
Mum stood on the doorstep with her chin up, like she was ready for an argument. And when Tansy stopped and stared at her face, she put a hand to her lip as if she had only just remembered it was split, and said, "I fell over." And then Tansy looked behind her to Mr. Nichols, who was sitting in the car, and Mum said, quick as anything, "He fell over too." Even though she hadn't actually been able to see his face, and she had just wanted to see whether they were getting in the car, or if they were going to have to get a bus after all. And Dad said, "Does everything you come into contact with these days suffer some kind of injury?" Mum gave him a look, and he muttered something about repairs, then said he'd go and get her bag, and Tansy let out a big breath and ran into Mum's arms, because although she'd had a nice time at Lindsay's house, she'd missed Norman, and she wanted to be with Mum, and she was suddenly really, really tired. The cabin that Mr. Nichols had rented was like something out of an advertisement for what old people want to do when they retire, or maybe pills for urine problems. It was on a lake, and there were a few other houses, but they were mostly set back behind trees or at angles so that no single window looked directly at any other house. There were 56 ducks and 20 geese on the water, and all but three were still there by the time they'd had tea. Tansy thought Norman might chase them, but he just flopped down on the grass and watched.
"Awesome," said Nicky, even though he didn't really like the outdoors at all.
He inhaled deeply. She realised he hadn't smoked a cigarette for 4 days.
"Isn't it?" said Mum. She gazed out at the lake and didn't say anything for a while. She started to say something about paying their share, and Mr. Nichols held up his hands and made this no-no-no-no noise like he didn't even want to hear it, and Mum went a bit pink and stopped. They had dinner on a barbecue outside, even though it was not really barbecue weather, because Mum said it would be a fun end to the trip, and when did she ever get time to do a barbecue anyway? She seemed determined to make everyone happy, and just chatted away about twice as much as anyone else, and she said she'd blown the budget because sometimes you had to count your blessings and live a little. It seemed like it was her way of saying thank you. So they had sausages and chicken thighs in spicy sauce and fresh rolls and salad, and Mum had bought 2 tubs of the good ice cream, not the cheap stuff that came in the white plastic cartons. She didn't ask anything about Dad's new house, but she did hug Tansy a lot and said that she'd missed her and wasn't that silly because it was only one night after all. They each told jokes, and even though Tansy could only remember the one about a stick being brown and sticky, everyone laughed. And they played the game where you put a broom to your forehead and run around it in circles until you fall over, which always made everyone laugh. Mum did it once, even though she could barely walk with her foot all strapped up, and kept saying, "Ow, ow, ow," as she went round in a circle. And that made Tansy laugh, because it was just nice to see Mum being silly for a change. And Mr. Nichols kept saying, "No, no, not for him, thanks, he would just watch." And then Mum limped over to him and said something really quiet in his ear, and he raised his eyebrows and said, "Really?" And she nodded, and he said, "Well, all right then." And when he crashed over, he actually made the ground vibrate a little. And even Nicky, who never did anything, did it, his legs sticking out like a daddy long legs. And when he laughed, his laugh was really strange, like this ho-ho-ho sound. And then Tansy decided she hadn't heard him laugh like that for ages, maybe ever. And she did it about 6 times until the world bucked and rolled beneath her, and she collapsed on her back on the grass and watched the sky spin slowly around her, and thought, that was a bit like life for their family, never quite the way up it was meant to be. They ate the food, and Mum and Mr. Nichols had some wine, and Tansy took all the scraps off the bones and gave them to Norman, because dogs die if you give them chicken bones. And then they put their coats on and just sat out on the nice wicker chairs that went with the cabin, all lined up in a row in front of the lake, and watched the birds on the water until it got dark. "I love this place," said Mum, into the silence. Tansy wasn't sure anyone was meant to see it, but Mr. Nichols reached over and gave Mum's hand a squeeze. Mr. Nichols seemed a bit sad most of the evening. Tansy wasn't sure why. She wondered if it was because they'd reached the end of the little trip, but she heard the geese and ducks quacking and splashing on the far side of the lake, and then just the water lapping against the shore, and it was really calm and peaceful. And then she must have fallen asleep, because she sort of remembered Mr. Nichols carrying her upstairs, and Mum tucking her in and telling her she loved her. But what she mostly remembered about the whole evening was that nobody talked about the Olympiad, and she was just really, really glad. Because here's the thing. While Mum was getting the barbecue set up, Tansy asked to borrow Mr. Nichols's computer and looked up the statistics for children of low-income families at private schools, and she saw within a few minutes that the probability of her actually going to St. Anne's had always been in single-figure percentages, and she understood that it didn't matter how well she had done in that entrance test, she should have checked this figure before they had even left home, because you only ever went wrong in life when you didn't pay attention to the numbers. Nicky came upstairs, and when he saw what she was doing, he stood there without saying anything for a minute, then patted her arm and said he would speak to a couple of people he knew in the year below him at MacArthur's to make sure they looked out for her. When they were at Lindsay's, Dad had told her that private school was no guarantee of success. He'd said it 3 times. "Success is all about what's inside you," he'd said. Determination. And then he said Tansy should get Suze to show her how she did her hair, because maybe hers would look nice like that too. Mum said she would sleep on the sofa that night, so that Tansy and Nicky could have the second bedroom. But Tansy didn't think she did, because she woke up really thirsty in the middle of the night because of Mum's cooking, and she went downstairs, and Mum wasn't there. And in the morning, Mum was wearing Mr. Nichols's grey T-shirt that he wore every single day, and Tansy waited 20 minutes watching his door, because she was curious to know what he was going to come down in. A faint mist hung across the lake in the morning. It rose off the water like a magician's trick as everyone packed up the car. Norman sniffed around the grass, his tail wagging slowly. "Rabbits," said Mr. Nichols. He was wearing another grey T-shirt. The morning was chill and grey, and the wood pigeons cooed softly in the trees, and Tansy had that sad feeling, like you've been somewhere really nice, and it's all come to an end. "I don't want to go home," she said quietly as Mum shut the boot. She flinched. "What, love?" "I don't want to go back home," Tansy said. Mum glanced at Mr. Nichols, and then she tried to smile, walked over slowly and said, "Do you mean you want to be with your dad, Tans? Because if that's what you really want, I'll..." "No, I just like this house, and it's nice here," she wanted to say. "And there's nothing to look forward to when we get back, because everything is spoiled. And besides, here there are no fishes." But she could see from Mum's face that that was what she was thinking too, because she immediately looked at Nicky, and he shrugged. "You know, there's no shame in having tried to do something, right?" Mum gazed at them both. "We all did our best to make something happen, and it didn't happen, but some good things have come out of it. We got to see some parts of the country we would never have seen. We learnt a few things. We sorted it out with your dad. We made some friends." It's possible she meant Lindsay and her children, but her eyes were on Mr. Nichols when she said it. "So, all in all, I think it was a good thing that we tried, even if it didn't go quite the way we'd planned. And you know, maybe things won't be so bad once we get home." Nicky's face didn't show anything. Tansy knew he was thinking about all the money. And then Mr. Nichols, who had said barely anything all morning, walked around the car, opened the door for her and said, "Yes, well, I've been thinking about that, and we're going to make a little detour."
Chapter 27. Jess. They were a muted little group in the car on the way home. Nobody asked to play music, and there was little conversation. Even the dog no longer whined, as if he had accepted that this car was now his home. The whole time Jess had planned the trip, through the strange, frenetic few days of travelling, she had imagined no further than getting Tansy to the Olympiad. She would get her there, she would sit the test, and everything would be okay. She hadn't given a thought to the possibility that the entire trip might take 3 days longer than she had planned, or that she would blow the budget in the process. She'd never once considered that they might need to stay somewhere on the way home, or that she would be left with precisely £13.81 in cash to her name, and a bank card that she was too frightened to feed into a cash point in case it didn't come back. Jess mentioned none of this to Ed. He was silent, his gaze trained on the road ahead. "Ed." Jess repeated his name silently in her head until it ceased to have any real meaning. She sat inches from this man who, she now understood, was quite simply the greatest man she had ever known. She was only surprised that nobody else seemed to have realized it. When he smiled, Jess couldn't help smiling. When his face stilled in sadness, something inside her broke a little. She watched him with her children, the easy way in which he showed Nicky some feature on his computer, the serious manner in which he considered some passing comment of Tansy's, the kind of comment that would have caused Marty to roll his eyes to heaven, and she wished he had been in their lives long ago. When they were alone, and he held her close to him, his palm resting with a hint of possession on Jess's thigh, his breath soft in her ear. She felt, with a quiet certainty, that it would all be okay. It wasn't that Ed would make it okay. He had his own problems to deal with. But that somehow the sum of them added up to something better. They would make it okay. Because she wanted Ed Nichols. She wanted to wake up with him. To drink with him. To feed him toast from sticky fingers. She wanted to wrap her legs around him in the dark and feel him inside her. To buck against him as he held her. She wanted the sweat and the pull and the solidity of him. His mouth on hers. His eyes on hers. They drove, and she recalled the previous two nights in hot, dreamy fragments. His hands, his mouth, the way he had to stifle her as she came so that they wouldn't wake the children. And it was all she could do not to reach across and bury her face in his neck, to slide her hands up the back of his T-shirt for the sheer pleasure of feeling his skin against hers. She had spent so long thinking only about the children, about work and bills and money. Now her head was full of him. When he turned to her, she blushed. When he said her name, she heard it as a murmur spoken in the dark. When he handed her a coffee, the brief touch of his fingers sent an electric pulse fizzing through her. She liked it when she felt his eyes settle on her, something distant in his gaze, and she wondered what he was thinking. Jess had no idea how to communicate any of this to him. She had been so young when she met Marty, and apart from one night in the Feathers with Liam Stubbs's hands up her shirt, she had never had even the beginnings of a relationship with anyone else since. Jess Thomas had not been on an actual date since school. It made her sound ridiculous, even to herself. She just wanted to show him. She ached with it. "We'll keep going to Nottingham, if you guys are all okay," he said, turning to look at her. He still had the faintest bruise on the side of his nose. "We'll pitch up somewhere late. That way we'll make it home in one run on Thursday." "And then what?" Jess wanted to ask. But she put her feet up on the dashboard and said, "Sounds good." They stopped for lunch at a service station. The children had given up asking if there was any chance they could eat anything but sandwiches, and now eyed the fast food joints and upmarket coffee shops with something close to indifference. They unfolded themselves and paused to stretch. "How about sausage rolls?" said Ed, pointing towards a concession. "Coffee and hot sausage rolls? Or Cornish pasties? My treat, come on." Jess looked at him. "I need some trash food. Some calorific, greasy junk. Who wants some greasy carbohydrate, kids?" He motioned to Jess. "Come on, you food Nazi. We'll eat some fruit afterwards." "You're not afraid? After that kebab?" His hand was above his brow, shielding his eyes from the sun so that he could see her better. "I've decided I like living dangerously." He had come to her the previous night after Nicky, who had been tapping silently away at Ed's laptop in the corner of the room, had finally gone to bed. She had felt like a teenager sitting there on the other sofa to him, pretending to watch the television, waiting for everyone else to go to bed, just so she could touch him. But when Nicky finally sloped off, Ed had opened up the laptop rather than moving straight to her. "What's he doing?" she had said as Ed peered at the screen. "Creative writing," he said. "Not gaming? No guns, no explosions? Nothing." "He sleeps," she had whispered. "He has slept every night we've been away, without a spliff." "Good for him. I feel like I haven't slept for several years." He seemed to have aged a decade in the short time they had been away. Jess wondered if she should apologize, if spending too much time with her chaotic little family would do that to any man. She remembered what Chelsea had said about her chances of having any kind of love life. And then, as she sat, suddenly unsure what to do next, he had reached out a hand to her and pulled her into him. "So," he had said softly, "Jessica Ray Thomas, are you going to let me get some sleep tonight?" She studied his lower lip, absorbing the feel of his hand on her hip, feeling suddenly joyous. "No," she said. Excellent answer. She had thought they might have had 3 hours. It was hard to tell. Now they changed direction, walking away from the mini-mart, weaving their way through clumps of disgruntled travellers, looking for cashpoint machines or overcrowded toilets. Jess tried not to look as delighted as she felt at the thought of not making another round of sandwiches. She could smell the buttery pastry of the hot pies from yards away. The children, clutching a handful of notes and Ed's instructions, disappeared into the long queue inside the shop. He walked towards her, so that they were shielded from them by the crowds of people. "What are you doing?" "Just looking." Every time he stood close to her, Jess felt like she was a few degrees warmer than she should have been. "Looking? I find it impossible being close to you." His lips were inches from her ear, his voice a low rumble through her skin. Jess felt her skin prickle. "What?" "I just imagine myself doing filthy things to you. Pretty much the whole time. Completely inappropriate things. Disgraceful things." He took hold of the front of her jeans and pulled her to him. A bolt of such heat went through her that she was amazed nobody could see it. Jess drew back a little, craning her neck to make sure they were out of sight. "That's what you were thinking about, while you were driving. All that time while you weren't speaking." "Yep." He glanced behind her towards the shop. "Well, that and food."
"My two favourite things, right there."
His fingers traced the bare skin under her top. Her stomach tensed pleasurably. Her legs had become oddly weak. She had never wanted Marty like she wanted Ed. "Apart from sandwiches."
"Let's not talk about sandwiches. Ever again."
And then he placed the flat of his hand on the small of her back so that they were as close as they could decently be.
"I know I shouldn't be," he murmured. "But I woke up really happy."
His face scanned hers.
"I mean, like, really, stupidly happy. Like, even though my whole life is a complete disaster, I feel okay. I look at you, and I feel okay. I feel like we're going to get through this."
A great fat lump had risen in her throat.
"Me too," she whispered.
He squinted against the sun, trying to gauge her expression.
"So, I'm not just a horse."
"You are so not a horse. Well, in the nicest way I could say that you were." He dropped his head and kissed her. He kissed her, and it was a kiss of utter certainty. The kind of kiss during which monarchs die and whole continents fall without you even noticing. When Jess extricated herself, it was only because she didn't want the children to see her lose the ability to stand. Her finger traced his lips, just for the pleasure of touching them. And he grinned. "They're coming," he said. Jess found herself staring at him goofily. "Trouble." He glanced back at her as they approached, bearing their paper bags aloft.
"That's what my dad said."
"Like you hadn't worked that one out by yourself." Her lips tingled. Her thoughts swam sweet and sticky like honey. Jess felt like he was imprinted all over her. She held back, watching Ed chat to Nikki. The opening of paper bags as Nikki revealed what they'd chosen, waiting for the colour on her cheeks to fade. She felt the sun on her skin. Heard birdsong over people talking, revving cars, smelt petrol fumes and cheap food, and the words echoed through her head, unbidden. "This is what happiness feels like." They set off slowly back to the car, faces already buried in paper bags. Jess watched her daughter walking a few paces ahead, her skinny legs trailing behind the others, and it was then that she noticed something was missing.
"Tans! Where are your maths books?"
She didn't turn around.
"I left them at Dad's."
"Oh, do you want me to call him?"
She fumbled in her bag for a mobile phone.
"I'm sure I can get him to pop them straight in the post. They'll probably arrive back before we do."
"No," she said. She inclined her head slightly towards her, but not quite meeting Jess's eye.
"Thank you."
Nicky stopped. As he reached the car, his gaze slid to Jess and back to his sister. And something heavy settled in her stomach. By the time they reached their final overnight stop, it was almost 9 o'clock and they were drooping. The children, who had been snacking on biscuits and sweets for most of the last leg of the journey, were exhausted and cranky and headed straight upstairs to examine the sleeping arrangements. Ed carried the bags and Tansy tugged the dog behind her. The hotel was vast and white and expensive-looking. The kind of place Mrs. Ritter might have shown Jess on her camera phone, and she and Natalie would have sighed about afterwards. Ed had booked it over the phone, and when Jess had started to protest about the cost, there was a slight edge to his voice. "We're all tired, Jess, and my next bed might be at Her Majesty's pleasure. Let's just stay somewhere nice tonight, okay?" Three interlocking rooms, in a corridor that seemed to double as an annex to the main hotel. "My own room," Nicky sighed with relief as he unlocked number 23. He lowered his voice as Jess pushed open the door. "I love her and everything, but you have no idea how much the titch snores." "Norman will like this," said Tansy, as Jess opened the door to room 24. The dog, as if in agreement, immediately flopped down at the side of the bed. "I don't mind sharing with Nicky, Mum, but he really does snore badly." Neither of them seemed to question where Jess would be sleeping. She couldn't work out if they knew and didn't mind, or whether they just assumed either she or Ed was still sleeping in the car. Nicky borrowed Ed's laptop. Tansy worked out how to operate the remote control for her television and said she would watch one program and then go to sleep. She wouldn't talk about the missing maths books. She actually said, "I don't want to talk about it." Jess didn't think Tansy had ever said those words to her. "Just because something doesn't work out once, sweetheart, doesn't mean you can't try it again," she said, laying out Tansy's pyjamas on her bed. Tansy's expression seemed to contain a knowledge that hadn't been there before, and her words broke Jess's heart. "I think it's best if I just work with what we've got, Mum." "What do I do?" "Nothing. She's just had enough for now. You can't blame her." Ed dropped the bags in the corner of the room. Jess sat on the side of the huge bed, trying to ignore her throbbing foot. "But this isn't like her. She loves maths, always has, and now she's acting like she doesn't want anything to do with it." "It's been 2 days, Jess. She's had a massive upheaval. Just let her be. She'll work it out." "You're so sure?" "They're smart kids." He walked over to the switch and turned the lights down, gazing up at them until he got it dark enough. "Like their mother. But just because you bounce back like a rubber ball, it doesn't mean they always will." She looked at him. "That's not a criticism. I'm just saying that it's been a pretty intense week. I think if you give her some time to decompress, she'll be okay. She is who she is. I can't see that changing." He pulled his T-shirt over his head in a fluid motion and dropped it onto a chair. Her thoughts muddled immediately. Jess couldn't see his bare torso without wanting to touch it. A little too thick around the middle to be perfect, perhaps, but that made it somehow more beautiful. "How did you get so wise?" she said, gazing at him.
"Dunno. I guess it rubbed off."
He took 2 steps towards her, and then he knelt down and pulled off her flip-flops, removing the one on her injured foot with extra care. "How's it feeling?" "Sore, but fine." He reached for her top. He unzipped it slowly and without asking, his eyes fixed on the skin it exposed. He seemed almost distant then, as if his thoughts were on her, yet miles away. The zip caught near the end, and she took it from him gently, her hands over his, unhitching the 2 sides so that he could peel it from her shoulders. He stood there for a moment, just gazing at her. He reached for her belt, undid it, then her jeans. His fingers measured and precise. She watched them and her heart began to pulse in her ears. "It's time, Jessica Ray Thomas, that someone looked after you." Edward Nichols washed her hair, his legs around her waist, as she lay back against him in the oversized bath. He rinsed it gently, smoothing it and wiping her eyes with a face cloth to stop shampoo getting into them. She went to do it herself, but he shushed her. Nobody had ever washed her hair outside a hairdresser's. It made her feel vulnerable and oddly emotional. When he was done,
He lay in the steaming, scented water with his arms wrapped around her and kissed the tips of her ears. And then, as if some part of them agreed jointly that this had been quite enough romantic stuff, thank you, she felt him rise under her and swiveled, lowered herself onto him, and they fucked until the water sluiced out of the bath, and she couldn't work out whether the pain of her foot was greater than her need to feel him inside her. Sometime later, they lay half-submerged, legs entwined, and they started to laugh. Because it was a cliché to fuck in a shower, but it was sort of ridiculous to do it in a bath, and it was even more ridiculous to be in this much trouble, and yet this happy. Jess twisted so that she lay along the length of him and draped her arms around his neck and pressed her wet chest to his. And she felt with utter certainty that she would never be as close to another human being again. "God, I love you," she told him silently. And then, so that she didn't let those words burst unbidden from her mouth, she smothered him with kisses. She held his face in her hands, and she kissed his jaw and his poor bruised temple and his lips, and she felt his arms holding her to him and told herself that whatever happened, she would always remember how this felt. He brought his hand down over his face, wiping the moisture from it. He looked suddenly serious. "Do you think this is a bubble?" "Oh, there's lots of bubbles. It's a..." "No, this. A bubble. We're on this weird journey where the normal rules don't apply. Real life doesn't apply. This whole trip has been like time out of real life." She noticed that the water was pooling on the bathroom floor. "Don't look at that. Talk to me." She dropped her lips to his collarbone, thinking. "Well," she said, lifting her head again, "in a little over 5 days, we've dealt with illness, distraught children, sick relatives, unexpected acts of violence, nearly broken feet, police, and car accidents. I'd say that was quite enough real life for anyone. I like your thinking. I like your everything. We seem to spend a lot of time talking rubbish to each other. Well, I like that too." The water had started to cool. She wriggled out of his arms and stood, reaching for the heated towel rail. She handed him a warm towel, wrapping one around herself. Oh, the utter sensual pleasure of fluffy hotel towels! He stood, rubbing at his hair vigorously with one hand. She wondered, briefly, whether Ed was so used to fluffy hotel towels that he didn't even notice. She watched him and felt suddenly bone-weary. She brushed her teeth, switched off the bathroom light, and when she turned back, he was already in the enormous hotel bed, holding back the covers to allow her in. He flicked off the bedside lamp, and she lay there beside him in the dark, feeling his damp skin against her own, wondering what it would be like to have this every night, to have a man all to herself forever. "I don't know what's going to happen to me, Jess," he said into the dark, as if he could hear her thoughts. His voice was a warning. "You'll be okay. Seriously. You can't do your optimism tricks on this one. Whatever happens, I'm probably going to lose everything. So, that's my default position. But I might have to go away."
"You won't."
"I might, Jess." His voice was uncomfortably firm. And she spoke before she knew what she was saying.
"Then I'll wait," she said.
She felt his head tilt towards her. A question.
"I'll wait for you, if you want me to."
He took 3 calls on the final leg home, all on hands-free. His lawyer, a man with an accent so grand he should have been announcing the arrival of the royal family at dinner, told him he was due at the police station the following Thursday. No, nothing had changed. Yes, said Ed, he understood what was happening, and yes, he had spoken to his family. The way he said it made her stomach tense. She couldn't help herself afterwards. She reached over and took his hand. When he squeezed it back, he didn't look at her. His sister rang to say his dad had had a better night. They had a long conversation about some insurance bonds that his father had been concerned about, some keys that were missing from a filing cabinet, and what Gemma had had for lunch. Nobody talked about dying. She said to say hello to Jess, and Jess shouted hello back and felt a bit self-conscious and a bit pleased at the same time. After lunch, he took a call from a man called Lewis, and they discussed market values and percentages and the state of the mortgage market. It took Jess a while to realise he was talking about beachfront. Time to sell, he said when he rang off. Still, like you said, at least I have assets to dispose of. What's it all going to cost you, the prosecution? Oh, nobody's saying. But reading between the lines, I think the answer is most of it. She couldn't work out if he was more upset than he was letting on. He tried to call someone else, but the answer phone kicked in. Is Ronan here? Leave a message. He hung up without saying anything. With every mile, real life moved steadily towards them like an encroaching tide, cold, unstoppable. Jess thought about the fact that there was a whole swathe of his life she knew nothing about and tried not to think about Bubbles. They finally arrived back shortly after four. As the Audi pulled into the street, the rain had eased to a fine drizzle. The road looked oily with damp, the sprawling Danehall estate struggling to show spring promise. There was the little house, somehow smaller and scruffier than Jess remembered it, and oddly, like something that had nothing to do with her. Ed pulled up outside, and she peered out of the window at the peeling paintwork on the upstairs windows that Marty had never got round to painting because he said, really, you had to do a proper job, sanding it first and taking off the old paint and using filler to plug the gaps, and he'd always been either too busy or too tired to do any of it. Just for a moment, she felt a wave of depression wash over her at the thought of all the problems that had been sitting there waiting for them on their return, and all the greater ones that she had created in her absence. And then she looked at Ed, who was helping Tansy with her bag and laughing at something Nicky said, leaning over to hear him better. And it passed. He had stopped at a DIY superstore about an hour out of town. His detour, emerging with a great box of stuff that he had to wrestle into the back alongside their bags. It was possible he needed to tidy his house before he sold it. Jess couldn't think what you would do to that house to make it any nicer. He dropped the last of the bags by the front door and stood there, holding the cardboard box. The children had disappeared immediately to their rooms, like creatures in some sort of homing experiment. Jess felt embarrassed then by the cluttered little house, the woodchip wallpaper, the long row of battered paperbacks that snaked along the hall. I'm going back to my dad's tomorrow. A reflexive twinge at the thought of his absence. Good. That's good. Just for a few days until the police thing, but I thought I'd put these up first. Jess looked down at the boxes. Security camera, a motion-activated light. Shouldn't take more than a couple of hours. You bought that for us? Nicky got beaten up. Tansy plainly doesn't feel safe. I thought it would make you all feel better, you know, if I'm not here. She stared at the box, at what it meant. She felt suddenly overwhelmed by the fact that this man had considered these things and wanted to protect them. She spoke before she knew what she wanted to say. You don't have to do that, she stammered. I'm good at DIY. I'll do it. On a ladder. With a busted foot? He raised an eyebrow. You know, Jessica Ray Thomas, at some point you're going to have to let someone help you. Well, what shall I do then? Sit down, stay still, put your injured foot up, and then afterwards I'll walk into town with Nicky and we'll buy a disgustingly unhealthy waste of money takeaway because it might be the last one I get for a while. And then we'll sit here and eat it. And afterwards you and I will lie around gazing in awe at the size of each other's stomachs. Oh my God, I love it when you talk dirty. So she sat, doing nothing, on her own sofa. And Tansy came and sat with her for a while. And Ed went up a ladder outside and waved the drill at her through the window and pretended that he was going to fall off until it made her anxious. I've been in two different hospitals in 8 days, she yelled at him through the window crossly. I do not want to make it a third. And then, because she was not very good at sitting still, she sorted some dirty washing and put a load in. But after that, she sat down again and just let everyone else move, because she had to admit that resting her foot was a lot less painful than trying to do things on it. And there was something so good about having everyone just potter around her, listening to the sound of Ed's drill and catching his eye through the window as he attached the camera and called at her to come, come and look. She couldn't remember the last time someone had done something to the house and it hadn't been her. Is that okay? She limped outside to see him. He stood back on the garden path, gazing up at the front of the house. I figured if I put it there, it'll catch anyone who comes, not just in your front garden, but who hangs around outside. It's got a convex lens, see? She tried to look interested. She was wondering whether, once the children had gone to bed, she could persuade him to stay over. And often, with these sorts of things, you find that just having a camera there is a deterrent. Would it really be that bad? He could always sneak out before they woke up. But then, who were they really kidding? Nicky and Tansy must have guessed something was going on, surely. Jess. He was standing in front of her. Hmm? All I have to do is drill a hole there and feed the wires in through that wall. Hopefully I can put a little junction just inside and it should be fairly simple to connect it all up. He wore the satisfied look that men assume when in possession of power tools. He patted his pocket, checking for screws, then looked at her carefully. Were you listening to a single thing I've said? Jess grinned at him guiltily. Oh, you're incorrigible, he said after a minute. Honestly. Glancing around to make sure nobody was looking, he hooked his arm gently around her neck, pulled her close and kissed her. His chin was thick with stubble. Now let me get on. I'm distracted. Go and dig out that takeaway menu. Jess limped, grinning, into the kitchen and began rootling through the drawers. She couldn't remember the last time she had ordered a takeaway. She was pretty sure none of the menus were up to date. Ed went upstairs to connect up the wiring. He shouted down that he was going to need to move some furniture to get at the skirting. Fine by me, she yelled back. She heard the rumbling, thunderous sound of large things being dragged around the floor above her head as he tried to access the electricity and marvelled again that somebody other than her was going to do it. And then she lay back on the sofa, put a fresh bag of ice on her foot, and started going through the fistful of old menus that she had uncovered in the tea towel drawer, unpicking the pages of those splashed with sauce or yellowed with age, weeding out the restaurants that were miles away or long closed. She was pretty sure the Chinese didn't exist anymore. Some business with environmental health. The pizza place was unreliable. The curry house menu looked pretty standard, but she couldn't shake the thought of that curly little hair in Natalie's Jalfrezi. Still, chicken balti, pilau rice, poppadoms. She thought of what he'd said about the two of them, side by side, gazing in awe at each other's stomachs. And then she forgot the curry and just thought about his naked stomach. She was so distracted that she didn't hear his footsteps as he came slowly down the stairs. Jess? I think this one will do it, she held up the menu. I've decided a hair of unknown provenance is a small price to pay for a decent job. It was then that she saw his expression, and what he held, disbelieving, in his hand. Jess? He said, and his voice sounded as if it belonged to someone else. Why would my security pass be in your sock drawer?
Chapter 28. Nicky. Jess stayed in bed for almost 2 days. Nicky came downstairs and she was just sitting on the sofa, staring straight ahead of her, like she was in a trance. The Black & Decker drill sat on the windowsill and the ladder was still propped against the front of the house. Has Mr. Nichols gone to get the takeaway? Nicky was a little annoyed that he didn't ask for onion bargees. She didn't seem to hear him. Jess? Her face was sort of frozen. She gave a little shake of her head and said quietly, No. He is coming back though, right? He said, after a minute. He opened the fridge door. He didn't know what he expected to find. There was a pack of shriveled lemons and a half-empty jar of Branston pickle. There was a long pause. I don't know, she said. And then, like she'd forgotten she'd said it, I don't know. So, We're not getting a takeaway. No. Nikki let out a groan of disappointment. Well, I guess he'll have to come back at some point. I've got his laptop upstairs. They'd obviously had some kind of row, but she wasn't behaving like she did when she and Dad had a row. Then she would slam a door and you'd hear her muttering, "Dick," under her breath, or wearing that really tight expression that said, "Why do I have to live with this idiot?" Yet not saying anything when he shouted at her because of the children. Now she looked like someone who'd just been given 6 months to live. "You okay?" She blinked and put a hand to her forehead, like she was taking her temperature. "Nikki, I need to lie down. Can you sort yourself out? There's stuff, food, in the freezer." In all the years Nikki had lived with her, Jess had never asked him to sort himself out. Even that time she had flu for 2 weeks. Before he could say anything, she turned and limped upstairs, really slowly, leaving him with it all. At first, when she didn't come down, he had thought it was just because she and Mr. Nichols had had an argument, and she was being all melodramatic about it. He and Tansy hovered outside her bedroom, discussing it in whispers. Then they took her in some tea and toast. She was just staring at the wall, even though the window was still open and it was getting cold outside. She hadn't seemed to notice. Nikki closed the window and put the ladder and the drill back in the garage, which seemed really enormous without the rolls in it. And when he came back a couple of hours later to collect her plate, the tea and toast were still there, just congealing on the bedside table beside her. "She's probably exhausted from all the travelling," said Tansy, like an old lady. But the next day, Jess stayed in bed. When Nikki went in, the covers were barely rumpled, and she was still wearing the exact same clothes she'd gone to bed in. "Are you ill?" he said, opening the curtains. "Do you want me to call the doctor?" "I just need a day in bed, Nikki," she said quietly. Natalie came round. "I said you'd call her, something about cleaning. Tell her I'm ill." "But you're not ill. And the police pound rang up to ask when you're picking up the car. And Mr. Svangorai rang up, but I didn't know what to say to him, so I just let him leave a message on the answer phone." "Nikki, please." Her face was so sad that he felt bad for even saying anything. She waited a moment, then pulled the duvet up to her chin and turned away. Nikki got breakfast for Tansy. He felt oddly useful in the mornings now. He wasn't even missing his stash. He let Norman into the garden and cleaned up after him. Mr. Nichols had left the security light out by the window. It was still in its box, which had become damp because of the rain, but nobody had nicked it. Nikki picked it up, brought it inside and sat there, looking at it. He thought about ringing Mr. Nichols, but he didn't know what he would say if he did, and he felt a bit weird asking Mr. Nichols to come back a second time. If someone wanted to be with you after all, they just made it happen. Nikki knew that better than anyone. Whatever had gone on between him and Mum seemed serious enough that he wasn't sure he should interfere. It was serious enough that he hadn't come back for his laptop. He sorted out his room. He went online for a while, but he was bored of gaming. He stared out the window at the roofs of the high street and the distant orange brick of the leisure centre. And he knew he didn't want to be an armor-clad droid shooting aliens out of the sky anymore. He didn't want to be stuck in this room. Nikki thought back to the open road, and the feeling of Mr. Nichols's car taking them vast distances, that endless time when they didn't even know where they were headed next. And he realized that, more than anything, he wanted to be out of this little town. He wanted to find his tribe. Nikki had given it some considerable thought and concluded by the afternoon of day 2, he was entitled to feel a little freaked out. School was due to start again after the weekend, and he wasn't sure how he was meant to look after Jess, as well as Titch, and the dog, and everything else. He vacuumed the house and rewashed a load of damp laundry that he found sitting in the washing machine, which had started to smell musty, and Tansy helped him peg it out. He walked with her to the shop, and they bought some bread and milk and dog food. and although he didn't show it to Tans, he was quite relieved that there was nobody hanging around outside to call him fag boy or freak or whatever. And Nicky thought maybe, just maybe, Jess had been right, and that things did change. And that maybe a new stage of his life was finally beginning. A short time later, as he was going through the post, Tansy arrived in the kitchen. Can we go back to the shop? He didn't look up. He was wondering whether to open the official letter addressed to Mrs. J. Thomas. We've just been to the shop. Then can I go by myself? He looked up then, and started a little. She had done something weird to her hair, putting it up on one side with a load of glittery slides. She didn't look like Tansy. I want to get Mum a card, she said, to cheer her up a bit. Nicky was pretty sure a card wasn't going to do it. Why don't you make her one, Titch? Save your money. I always make her one. Sometimes it's nice to get a shop card. He studied her face. Have you got makeup on? Only a bit of lipstick. Jess wouldn't let you wear lipstick. Take it off. Suze wears it. I don't think that's going to make Jess any happier about it, Titch. Look, take it off and I'll give you a proper makeup lesson when you get back. She pulled her jacket from the hook and left. Mum had let Tansy walk to the shop and back since she was 9. I'll rub it off on the way, she called over her shoulder. Take Norman with you, he yelled. Then he made a cup of coffee and carried it upstairs. It was time to sort Jess out. Saying those words to himself made Nicky feel weirdly grown up. It was time to sort Jess out. The room was dark. It was 3:15 in the afternoon, but she hadn't even bothered opening the curtains. Leave it on the side, she murmured. The room held the fug of unwashed bodies and undisturbed air. It stopped raining. Good. Jess, you need to get up. She didn't say anything. Really, you need to get up. It's starting to honk in here. I'm tired, Nicky. I just need a rest. You don't need rest. You're like our household Tigger. Please, love. I don't get it, Jess. What's going on? She turned over really slowly, then propped herself up on one elbow. Downstairs, the dog had begun to bark at something, insistent, erratic. Jess rubbed at her eyes. Where's Tansy? Shop? Has she eaten? Yes, but mostly cereal. I can't really cook anything more than fish fingers, and she's sick of those. She looked at Nicky, then out towards the window as if weighing something up, and then she said, he's not coming back. And her face sort of crumpled. The dog was really barking outside now, the idiot. Nicky tried to stay focused on what Jess was saying. Really? Never? A great fat tear rolled down her cheek. She wiped it away with the flat of her hand and shook her head. You know the really stupid bit, Nicky? I actually forgot. I forgot I did it. I was so happy while we were away. It was like all the time before it happened to someone else. Oh, that bloody dog. She wasn't really making sense. He wondered if she actually was ill. You could call him. I tried. He's not picking up. Do you want me to go over there? Even as he asked, he slightly regretted it. Because even though he really liked Mr. Nichols, he knew better than anyone that you couldn't make someone stay with you. There was no point trying to hang on to someone who didn't want you. It's possible she told him because she didn't have anyone else to tell. I loved him, Nicky. I know it sounds stupid after such a short time, but I loved him. It was a shock to hear her say it. All that emotion just blurted out there, but just for once it didn't make him want to run. Nicky sat on the bed, leant over, and although he still felt a bit weird about actual physical contact, he hugged her. She felt really small, even though he'd always thought of her as sort of bigger than he was. And she rested her head against him. And he just felt really, really sad, because for once, he did want to say something, but he didn't know what. It was at that point that Norman's barking got hysterical. like when he saw the cows in Scotland. Nicky pulled back, distracted. He sounds like he's going insane. Bloody dog. It'll be that chihuahua from 56. Jess sniffed and wiped at her eyes. I swear it torments him on purpose. Nicky climbed off the bed and walked over to the window. Norman was in the garden barking hysterically, his head thrust through the gap in the fence where the wood was rotten and two of the panels had half broken away. It took him a few seconds to register that he didn't look like Norman. The dog was weirdly upright, his hair bristling. Nicky pulled the curtain back further, and it was then that he saw Tansy across the road. There were two fishers and a boy he didn't recognize, and they had backed her up against the wall. As Nicky watched, one of them grabbed at her jacket, and she tried to bat his hand away. "Hey! Hey!" he yelled. But they didn't hear him. His heart thumping. Nicky wrestled with the sash window, but it refused to budge. He banged on the glass, trying to make them stop. "Hey! Shit! Hey!" "What?" said Jess, swiveling in the bed. "Fishers!" They heard Tansy's high-pitched scream. As Jess dived out of bed, Norman stilled for a split second, then hurled himself against the weakest section of the fence. He went through it like a canine battering ram, sending pieces of wood splintering into the air around him, straight towards the sound of Tansy's voice. Nicky saw the fishers spin round to see this enormous black missile coming for them, and their mouths opened. And then he heard the screech of brakes. A surprisingly loud woomph. Jess's, "Oh God, oh God." And then a silence that seemed to go on and on forever.
Chapter 29. Tansy. Tansy had sat in her room for almost an hour trying to draw Mum a card. She couldn't work out what to put on it. Mum seemed like she was sick, but Nicky said she wasn't really sick, not like Mr. Nichols had been sick. So it didn't seem right to write a Get Well Soon card. She thought about writing Be Happy, but it sounded like an instruction, or even an accusation. And then she thought about just writing I Love You, but she'd wanted to do it in red, and all her red felt tips had run out. So then she thought she'd buy a card, because Mum always said that Dad had never bought her a single one, apart from a really cheesy padded Valentine's Day card once, when they were courting. And she burst out laughing at the word courting. Mostly, Tansy just wanted her to cheer up. A mum should be in charge, taking care of things and bustling around downstairs, not lying up there in the dark like she was really a million miles away. It made Tansy fearful. Ever since Mr. Nichols had gone, the house had felt weirdly quiet, and a massive lump had lodged itself in her stomach, like something bad was about to happen. She had crept into Mum's room that morning when she woke up, and crawled into bed with her for a cuddle, and Mum had put her arms around her and kissed the top of her head. Her hair was a bit greasy, and she had no makeup on, but Tansy nestled into her anyway. "Are you ill, Mum?" she'd said. "I'm just tired, Tans." Mum's voice did sound like the saddest, tiredest thing in the world. "I'll get up soon, I promise." "Is it because of me?" "What?" "Not wanting to do maths anymore. Is that what's making you sad?" And then Mum's eyes filled with tears, and Tansy felt like she'd somehow made things even worse. "No, Tans," she said and pulled her close. "No, darling, it is absolutely nothing to do with you and maths. That is the last thing you should think." But she didn't get up. So Tansy was walking along the road with £2.15 in her pocket that Nicky had given her, even though she could tell he thought a card was a stupid idea, and wondering if it was better to get a cheaper card and some chocolate, or if a cheap card spoiled the whole point of a card full stop, when a car pulled up alongside. She thought it was someone going to ask for directions to Beachfront. People were always asking for directions to Beachfront.
but it was Jason Fisher. "Oi, freak," he said.